Let's start at the very beginning.
The very beginning.
Let's go
the foundation.
Because there's lots of little questions I want to ask, and your story. So, where did you both grow up?
So I grew up in North London. My mum's old school garage DJ, DJ Funky Fee. She used to do 90.6, you know, Chicago Y2K, back in the 90s. So I grew up in North London. Instantly, of course, had passion for music because my mum was a DJ. Grew up loving grime. Had a bit of a naughty life. Naughty teenage years, you know, got myself into a lot of madness. Then I found drum and bass. And it literally changed my life. So from like, 14, I started raving. And literally, it completely altered my path, you know. I was on the route to going down that Top Boy route. You know? So it was, drum and bass actually stopped me from becoming a criminal. It stopped me from ruining my life, stopped me from dying, stopped me from being in prison. And 3 years into raving, I met this one. So, and then from there, I started emceeing, and, the rest is history, as it were, from there. But, North London's my original stomping ground.
What's your real name?
Oh, Amber.
Amber, okay.
Yeah, Andy.
Yeah.
I'm from Tunbridge Wells, Kent, and grew up around there and moved to London. I flitted back and forth. I lived there in Crystal Palace for a little while. Then when I met Stars, we started living together in Holloway. And sort of as Stars touched on, we met in a rave in Brixton because I was MCing before she was, basically. I used to roll with my boy MC Kid. I was MCing at a rave in Brixton and she was there. And basically, it's a funny story. It's almost one of those typical sort of stories.
Boy meets girl.
Yeah. I was standing there waiting for my set. I think I was actually watching like Skibber or someone was
something
on.
Like
yeah.
That. Yeah. All right.
The crowd kind of just opened up and the lights, you know, as they do, they sort of flick on and off. And basically, I just saw these two girls, this one white girl and Amber, and she's just pointing at me. Yeah. And so I just walked over and said, "What are you pointing at me for?" Yeah. And she said, "Oh, my mate just asked like who I thought was the hottest guy in here. So I was just pointing at you." I was like, "Oh, okay, all right. Well, listen, I'm an MC, you know, and all this, yeah. I'm MCing in the other room in like half hour, whatever. Do you want to come in, check out my set?" So she was there at the front, whole set. Then afterwards, obviously said, "You know, you want to come outside for a smoke and stuff?" We went out, sat in my car with her mate Michaela and my mate Kid. And just got
MySpaces.
Yeah.
MySpaces. Yeah.
And then we just sort of spoke a little bit from there. That's July 2007.
So yeah, 15 years
when
ago.
When we met, yeah. Mm. And we spoke for sort of 6 months or so. Then I think we arranged to link up at a few more raves and stuff. And then in that time, she'd started spitting a little bit. And yeah, then just some mad things happened, really. Like, I was doing this radio show with Addict, Remedy, and my boy Kid. And then Kid had got Funster, Harry Shotter, and Lady MC to come join us for a guest show. And then I got Stars to come.
That was like my third ever radio show as well. It was the most daunting thing I've ever done. 17 years old, had about 7 or 8 bars to my name. And they just like, "Oh, do you want to come up and do radio with me?" "Yeah, I've got Fun, Harry Shotter, Lady MC coming if you want." I was like, "What? Are you joking?" But it was a great
The funniest thing, so we had our own little crew. We were called the Southern Soldiers, yeah. And that show, it sort of became this little like Unk Southern Soldiers thing, yeah. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, when we watch it back now, it's so cringeworthy. I mean, it's a real part of our history, real part of
our
history.
So how long ago was that?
14 years
ago. So it was January 2008.
So it's real history for us, yeah.
And how did you get your names, Stars and Deezer? How did that? Did you already have your names, or did you change them?
No, so we were. I was already Stars, and he was already Deezer.
Yeah,
we were actually, when we first got together, it was actually Deezer and Stars.
Yeah.
Mainly because he was known in the scene, I wasn't, and also it was just the way it went. Then 6 years ago or so, we decided we wanted to just do a little rebrand. We actually did think about changing our names. We were trying to get the logo and everything. And we literally just went, "Hang on, sounds a little bit better just the other way around. It just rolls a bit better, Stars and Deezer."
Mm.
Then we got the logo made. And of course, that sits beautifully like that, the Stars and the D.
Mm.
And actually, since that happened, that was when everything changed. It sounds mad, but literally swapping our names around, it felt like that was the start.
It fitted more.
Yeah, and that was like
rolled off your tongue.
We've had a lot of compliments on what a good name it is, or how well it flows and stuff. And it's funny, like, we didn't even really think about it. You know, we've been through the notions throughout the years. We started Cruise, we finished Cruise, we started new Cruise, and started new names. And yeah, so then on that note, we sort of thought, try and maybe rebrand ourselves. We're trying to pick up more traction, trying to get sort of more known, and you know, and then sometimes when you feel like you're at a bit of a dead end, you feel like taking a new path, you know. So maybe with the name These Are Stars, maybe it's not picking up enough traction, maybe come with something fresh, come with something new. And so we thought, yeah, as Star said, about maybe changing the name or just rebranding, coming with some kind of crew or something. And we were just sort of grabbing at different ideas. But yeah, the best thing we've ever done, actually, believe it or not, is just stick together. You know, we've tried to roll with DJs. I mean, and no disrespect to any of them. Of course, we had have a really good mate from Belgium. We were rolling with him, Mr. Quiet. We started a crew with him. Obviously my mate Kid, we were sort of still doing our Southern Soldiers thing, but sometimes three as a crowd as well, you know. Yeah, like we've just stuck together. We kind of know each other through and through. We know what we do, we know how we work. And
well, I think having where it is just us two, we're an MC duo, it's given us that opportunity. We've worked with so many people in the scene because of it. Whereas had we been in a crew with maybe another DJ or even another MC, it may have been like, well, actually, you do your thing.
We always
get booked for our set, and that's it.
Yeah.
So we've always enjoyed the fact that because we are an MC duo, we can work with other MCs, but we can work with any of the DJs in the scene as well. And it's really, I feel like it's really not necessarily helped us in our career, but it's given us a lot of contact and connections and things like that. And, you know, we've now, it's taken us 14 years, but we've now actually got a level of respect in the scene from our own foundations, not because of what our crew set does or because of, you know, our label and stuff like that. It's literally because of us.
So who would you say were the people that gave you breaks, like before you met each other and then together? I mean, to tell you the truth, when I watch you guys, you look like one unit, and which is great because you bounce off of each other and you've got that really great camera video presence. And I would say, I mean, you know, we've been in it from day one, and it's nice to see when a fresh act is coming through and they're doing their own thing, because you've got to earn your stripes. You know how hard 100%. It is, do you know what I mean? 100%. It's not easy. People are here today, gone tomorrow. It's all about likes and maybe not necessarily about talent. And I think it's really great that you make all these videos. I mean, you know, Jamie's my boy, isn't it? Jamie Kelly, big up Jamie Kelly, we love you. And he's always saying to me, oh right, I'm going on another Stars and Deezer video, and I was like, yeah, what, another one? But it's good that you keep that level of work rate up, and even if nothing's going on for you, you're making something happen for yourself.
Lockdown proved that, innit? I mean, with lockdown, that was a real, again, another real turning point in our careers, because we were, you know, doing our thing, but like bumbling through, if you like, just doing our thing. Then lockdown happened and it was like, shit, all of this, all of the big major things have been taken from us. Yeah, all we've got now is our studio. That's all we've got. So what are we going to do with this?
Well, you said
are
that we all musicians, we've got, we had the studio, but we also had each other. That was the key thing. At the start of all of it, I said to Stars, I was like, do you know what? We can just carry on as normal here. Because that's exactly what we've been doing already. Yeah, okay, we've been performing at raves, we've been doing this, we've been doing that. But you know what? The essence is still the same right now. Yeah. Through lockdown, we still have each other, we still have our studio, we still have our online label, because we're with Cygnus and stuff. We set up a label with them. They put a thing out at the beginning of lockdown as saying, you know, yeah, it's a bit crazy, but they're still working from home. Things are still running.
Yeah.
What else was there?
You don't just put out jungle, drum and bass. You put out grime, you put out hip hop. And you just produce that yourself. You do the tunes and then you just put them through. What's your label called?
It's just called Stars and Things of Music.
Because I mean, that was, we literally created the label just so that we could put music out just for ourselves, like so that we've got a catalogue, you know. So if someone says, oh, you guys got music out, we're like, yeah, we're on Spotify, iTunes, Deezer, we're on all of these things. And that was the sole reason we brought the label out, was just so people, you know, the random John around the corner could go and look us up and find our music.
Yeah, we just set up our own platform, basically. We just thought, you know what, why not? It was actually some advice given to us by a friend. And we just, it was actually so easy to set up the label. Mm. And then it's been so beneficial because we finish a track. The thing is, we don't look for, because we're creating multi-genre tunes as well, we're not searching for a hip-hop label to sign it or a drum and bass label to sign it or whatever. Do you know what? Mm. When we're happy with it and it's done, we put it out on our label and that's it. And then we start promoting it. And it's a different kind of way of different strategy, but you know what? It's obviously it's been getting our names out there. It's been getting our music heard. So,
well, the thing is as well, we live in a day and age now where you don't necessarily need a major label to make it. Mm. You know, you can if you're producing
you can
good
be
quality
an indie,
music.
Yeah. Like me, yeah. I'm still exactly. in indie. I've been going 28 years this year.
Wow.
So you just, you know, like I've stuck to my guns. Mm-hmm. And for me, integrity is everything. Yes. I don't want to do stuff that I don't like.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I don't like it, I don't play it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's simple. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not, you know, sometimes people go against the grain. And I'm not knocking that because if you've got bills to pay and it's not the flavour, but I've been lucky. I haven't been lucky enough. I made my way like you've made your way.
Exactly.
I put my stamp on it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and that's what I like about you guys.
No,
how come I'm not on your mailing list?
Do you know, we don't have one.
You don't?
Yeah, do you know what? We started the mailing list and then we
collated information from mailing lists.
We never followed it through.
But that would be even like people like me on radio because Carousel sends me stuff, DRS sends me stuff. It's not necessarily all based around Jungle, D&B, but I play it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll take that away. Yeah.
I think if you've got like a little radio list and a little DJ club list, then that's good. I can help you do that.
Yeah, we've
got people that work with us, so I can point you in the right direction because I think now doing that, you'll reach a different audience rather than just the audience that you've got in front of you.
Nice.
Because if someone like me plays it or someone else plays it on another radio and they're like, hey, have you heard this tune? Then it picks up traction.
Well, this is kind of sort of like our next step, as it were, because we've established our label, right? We know how to put tunes out. We know how to get traction on them. But we don't send them to many people. And it's not for want of wanting to. It's just that we release it and then we move on to the next project.
That's good.
So we don't think about, oh, actually, who can we send this to? Who can play it? You know, we'll upload it onto the BBC Introducing Uploader and stuff like that. And that will tend to get played at our local BBC radio, which is great. But after that, we just kind of go, right, next project.
Yeah.
So we never think about, actually, hang on, this tune, you know, a tune's timeless. All tunes are timeless. And people don't know what they are and people don't know them until it's new to everyone the first time they hear it.
So who writes and who produces and who does the engineering?
We actually both. We've both got a couple of tracks that... it's funny, because my influence is hip-hop, yeah? When I was growing up, my influence was hip-hop. When Stars was growing up, her influence was garage and grime and that.
Where's your family from?
My mum's Persian, Iranian. My dad was English. So, I'm half Persian. And so, my background, it's funny because we did it without even realising, the tune that we made, Weed Is From The Earth, or I made, Weed Is From The Earth, when you look at, and then the tune that Stars made, Say No More, when you put the two of them together, you can really tell, that came from Stars' influence and that came from my influence because I made a proper 90s, like, hip-hop kind of vibe track, She made, like, a...
It was like a noughties grime track.
Yeah.
Literally.
So, and we did it, you know, when she started making Say No More, she just kind of got involved. Mm. So she knows how to use, all the buttons in the studio.
Well, we produce differently as well, so, like...
What do you use?
Logic.
Both of you.
Yeah, we both use Logic, but the way we produce is quite different. So I can't get my head around sampling and stuff like that. I cannot get my head around it. I like to play with like a synth or something and create a sound. Whereas Deez is much better at sampling than I am, like way better at sampling. So when we're both producing tracks, if you used to put us both in the studio and say, right, go and produce a drum and bass track, they would be completely different, even though we work so closely together because we have such different ways of looking at music and stuff like
and
that.
And drum and bass is hard to make, man.
So hard.
You know what? It's so funny.
It's easy. I could show you. I could show you.
It's
like,
so hard.
I use Cubase. I'm old school. But it's as hard as... I think what it is, and I notice a lot of things, people from the hip-hop and soul, it's the speed that kind of, like, shocks them a little bit because even when we produce now, instead of trying to, like... the BPMs is at 175, then all the recordings is done at 87.5 BPM.
Yeah.
So it sits on half the time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you don't have to rush that and you can still be in your element. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But But why do you think it's hard?
Layers,
yeah, and making basses and stuff.
Yeah. So like we've when I produce Say No More, looking at all the channels, you know, of course you've got all your various layers. Even with all the drums split out and everything split out, it was like 25 channels. Then when we were with a producer and literally they opened up a drum and bass project and I was just like, what is that? It was just rows and rows and rows. I was like, you know, oh look, there's my bass. I'm like, there's like 15 channels there. What the hell? And it's that is what.
No, I think sometimes the new school kids with the digital, like usually when I make a tune, it's like 7 to 8 channels.
Oh,
maybe
really?
14 to 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
Renegade Terrorist is like 8 channels.
Really?
So that, but that's what I'm saying to you. It's not how much you have, but what they like to do is they like to tweak the drum here and the bass here. And, but what we should do is, I think Dorian's got Cubase here, and next time you come over. Yeah. And we'll just have a mess about in the studio.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because I can show you some stuff that's going to make you go, oh, shit, I didn't know.
Yeah,
you
nice. Oh,
amazing, yeah.
But this is the thing. One thing we've learned about the music game is there's always stuff to learn as well. You know, anyone that ever feels like they're at the top or whatever... I mean, there are some people that are at the top, obviously, but there's always in life.
Every day's a school day.
Yeah, 100%. I've been producing forever, and I'm still learning.
Yeah.
But now, because I'm engineering, those doors have opened up for us. So what was the first gig apart from the radio station? The first live gig that you did together?
It's your gig, wasn't it? You put on a rave in Hastings.
Yeah, I put on a rave.
He gave me my first booking.
Reality down in Hastings, and it was all right. We had fun, and Harry Shotter headlining. I can't really remember much of the other lineup.
Yeah, because it was a long time ago, and we were quite messy people back then.
It was a bit of a messy one. It was in like an an old casino or something like that.
All I remember
Vegas, it was called in Hastings.
The DJ booth and where you MC'd was like 15 foot in the air.
Yeah.
I remember that, it was just all the way up there.
But yeah, so that was our first gig together, technically, yeah.
And then like a month later, you did another one at Herbal, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Herbal was a great spot.
That was so one of our favourite spots, good. Man.
I'm glad we got to play there, actually, because when did it close down? What, 2010?
Yeah, something like that. Because Spencer used to run that place, and he I used to play upstairs as well. Mm. They used to do like an after party.
Yeah,
and that was a great spot. Ryder used to do his thing there on a Sunday, and I did quite a few parties there.
Yeah,
and the sound system was great.
They had that mad little like grass area as well, wasn't it? Like the sort of outdoor, indoor bit.
We could go and have a smoke in there.
Yeah, it's good
that was
times.
A wicked spot.
Yeah. This is episode 24 of The Blueprint, and we have Stars and Deezer in the building. I've got loads more questions to ask you. Actually, you know what? Which is something that's again been born out of jungle and the drum and bass scene, because of you guys from your backgrounds, grime and hip hop. It's great to see yourselves, Carousel, DRS, and a few other people now kind of following their dreams and make it multi-genre and step into that and deliver your as an artist and feeling free on how to spit rather than be, oh, I've got to do this, I've got to keep it like this.
Yeah.
And that's what Skibber RIP was doing, that's what Shotter's doing, Shabba, and it's really good to see that because at the end of the day, you know, UK hip-hop, I mean, I come from... Pogo, the London Posse, Bionic, Rodney P, all of them, man. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Smashing down the doors. Obviously, David Rodigan for the whole reggae, Chris Goldfinger. Mm-hmm. And those were the only things that you really had on daytime radio that you could follow. Do you see what I'm saying? Which was really important, I think. Do you know what I mean? Like
100%. One of the things we've absolutely loved about like this day and age, as you say, being able to be multi-genre now, not only can you go across different genres, but you can actually fuse them as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do, so something that we love doing at the moment is we'll spit grime bars on drum and bass.
Yeah.
And it goes off because it's that little bit faster. And so, I mean, don't get me wrong, if someone's playing a really fast set, you know, sometimes you go into a rave and someone's on like 184 or something, you're like, whoa. Them grime bars are staying in the arsenal. But being able to take your lyrics from other genres and put it on a different genre, it creates a whole new sound. And everyone's like, what was that? That was amazing. So I love the fact that we can now take stuff that we've taken from one genre and put it on another genre and blow people's minds in multiple ways with the same lyric. It's great. Yeah.
So who leads when you're playing? Like who will is there a set way, like you'll
not
start?
Really, it depends. I think it depends on the setting.
We're very fluid when it comes to things like that, I suppose. You know, we generally have like some opening bars, for example, like let's go. But it's funny actually, quite a lot of the time, Stars will know what I'm going to say and vice versa, you know. So I could literally maybe just intro with saying a couple of words before the drop and say, all right, who's ready? Let's go. And as soon as she hears it, she instantly knows without shadow of a doubt, I'm about to go into let's go, light it up like petrol. Yeah. And so we're very in sync when it comes to things like that.
We kind of just let it flow as well. I mean, look at the other night. Where was it connected? We were literally performing, just doing our thing, going back to back. Dee's finished the bar. And then I came back in with another one of his bars.
Yeah.
So I actually ended up spitting like the first three or four lines of one of his lyrics, and then he carried it on. So we just kind of go with how the set goes. Realistically, the way our set goes, it will depend on the DJ. It's completely dependent on the DJ.
So you're out, you're DJing, you're working, you're with each other 24/7, and then you go home. When do you turn off the Stars and Dees are? When do you become you two?
You know, it's weird. Obviously, they say...
good question.
They say, obviously...
That's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, they say don't mix business with pleasure. And, I mean, me and Stars are effectively a perfect example of doing exactly that. Mm. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, we have our trials and tribulations, if you like.
It's been a hard
road. Yeah, it's not easy. I mean,
of course it is. No relationship is easy.
Yeah,
telling you it is, they're full.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The music game ain't easy. And relationships ain't easy. You got to put a lot of work into both of them. Mm. Our relationship, we've put plenty of work into that over the years, had our ups and downs, and the same with our music. Of course, the mad thing is with the music, you know, sometimes after a gig or whatever, you've got that natural high, you're feeling buzzing and everything. So we go through those things together. We experience the highs together. But of course, we equally experience the lows together.
Yeah.
You know, so when we get knocked back for something, or we didn't quite get that, or we didn't quite get that, something we were really going for, you know, it's not just me that's feeling a bit low, and she wants to cheer me up a bit, make me a cup of tea. She's feeling just as low as well, you know.
But so, it has its pros with that, because we're in it together. You know, one of the things, it's quite mad actually, because one of the things I absolutely love about us being together and being in the scene together is, something's bothering me, or if something's got me really excited, I can just say one sentence and he knows exactly how excited I am or exactly how annoyed I am about it, because he understands the scene to the same level that I do. Mm. It's not like, you know, I can imagine it's like this for a lot of artists where something might be bothering them or something's got them really excited and they explain it to their other half and they go, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
They don't get it.
They don't get it.
They don't get it.
And it also, there's a great detachment, like you said. After you come off, you're filled with energy, and then suddenly it's like an anticlimax, because you go back to the hotel room, you're by yourself, and that you're so separated from that. They don't see the tiredness, the driving, the getting to the gig, the can't park in, the ticket, the whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you haven't planned it right, you haven't eaten right.
Yeah.
And these are all things that are not taught for you.
Yeah.
And you have to know, you know, even like when you turn up, oh, we need to turn up a little half hour before. Mm. We need to set the pace, see who's on, see who's DJing, touch base with the technician, make sure the mics are working. All of these things that people just see you up there and see the glory, but they don't see the hard work, because it is hard work.
Exactly, right? That's it. And I think as well, so I'd say probably where it switches off is, probably 90% of the time we're on Stars and Dees time, aren't we?
Yeah, I was just because... I was about to go back. To be honest, pretty much never switches off, really. Yeah. This is we live and breathe this thing.
Yeah.
I have a son, so we don't have kids together, but I have a son. Mm. So it's great in a sense, because we have the family aspect. My son,
how old is he?
He's 17 now.
He's a big boy now.
So I was young when I had him. But basically, so we've been through the whole family thing. But the great thing is, of course, we pretty much have him week on, week off. So we do a week having him doing the family thing, and then he goes to his mum's, and then we're just back
to... Got a week of Stars and Deezer in.
So. Yeah. But the thing is, we've taken my son so many places. He's come to NAS Festival with us. He's come to Notting Hill Carnival. He's come to various festivals or street things. We came to Hackney Carnival with us.
Yeah.
He's been to loads of spots with us. Yeah.
He went to a nightclub in LA.
Yeah.
At 13.
When we were out in Los Angeles, we were performing out there, and...
What was that like?
It was crazy, yeah. My cousin that lives out there was supposed to look after him on the day whilst we went and did the gig. And then basically there was a few misunderstandings, and she didn't realise how late it was going to be. Like, we weren't on until 2 or 3 in the morning or whatever. She said, I can't have him, I'm afraid, like that late, yeah. And so it got a bit crazy. Like, we're like, what are we going to do? Like, we can't obviously leave him in a hotel.
Because we've gone out to LA for the gig.
he was 13 at the time. Yeah, basically, we were out in LA for the gig, but we also tried to make it, we brought my son and made it a bit of a family holiday. We had an extended stay and stuff. So anyway, I spoke to the promoter and I said, look, man, this is the situation. I know you've got a wife and kid at home, and obviously we'd met them. I said, is there any way, is it cool that my son can stay with them? He said, look, it's fine, just bring him to the club. I said, nah, I don't know. That doesn't seem like the responsible thing to do as a parent. Yeah,
and, of course, it's over 21 there, so we're like, sure.
Yeah, he was 13 at the time, by the way, yeah. And he said, nah, it's fine, just bring him to the club. There's an office upstairs he can sit in. He'll be at by himself. He can keep an eye on you, because there was like a window-type thing he could look over. And I said, all right, cool. So, and he said, because he owns the club, so it's fine, he can just come there.
Big
so
up Construct, by the way, UG.
We took my son Ashley to a club in Los Angeles, and he had a great time. I mean, he did get tired, and he just sort of had a little nap in the office room upstairs. Yeah. And then when we left, I said to him, Ash, this is really something you should brag to your mates about. Yeah? Like, you've been to a club in Los Angeles at age 13. And so it was really crazy, really experienced, not only for us, but for him as well.
How many tracks did you do?
We did the drum bass set.
We were on with Tyke. He was the secret UK headliner. Mm. And I mean, there was other artists there. There was like Icicle,
Felon.
Felon.
I can't remember his name.
And Tyke was
Premium.
Tyke was already out in the States, yeah. So basically, he was kept as like a secret UK headliner. Mm. And then we were put on with him.
Was that Club Respect? No.
No, not Respect. It was Club Union.
Union,
okay.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that?
Good few years. 2018.
2018.
Yeah, so not that long ago. Yeah, but it was amazing.
Pre-pandemic. Yeah.
We actually had like a sort of West Coast tour planned. It was really pretty much confirmed that we were going to do Oregon, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego.
Yeah.
But then COVID hit and it all kind of just fell through. Mm. And we're kind of just waiting.
We were literally on the brink of sorting it out. We were just about sorting it out, but then COVID hit.
We'd love to sort of get back over to the States, to be honest.
It seems to be popping there again. What I did ask, who was the person that gave you your break separately, like, because you were recording, you were doing hip hop, you were doing grime.
So not so much. So I started off as a drum bass MC. The reason I started MCing was I used to go out raving a lot, and one of my mates at the time, Lady Blazer, she was an MC, and of course we'd go out, have a messy night, she'd come back to mine afterwards, and she would just spend hours just spitting bars to me. I was like, do you know what? I can do that. I think I could do that. Let me have a go. So I wrote a lyric. Then we went out one night and she actually made me, we went to the toilet and I performed my lyric to her and she was like, you're amazing. Drags me out of the toilet, drags me up to Harry Shotter and she goes, spit your bar to him. I'm like, really? Okay. So I did it. Again, he was like, really like what you do, keep doing your thing. So I didn't write any grime or anything like that before drum and bass. I made drum and bass first. And then it's actually the progression has come since we've been drum and bass MCs, isn't it? The progression into the other genres and stuff, like actually making that kind of music, has come after.
So that was kind of the first person that gave you your break. Who was the first person that gave you your break?
So I wasn't doing hip-hop. I always, my influence was hip-hop. I was into Coolio, Wu-Tang, stuff like that. But no, when I started spitting, it was predominantly drum and bass. I don't know who gave me my first break. I think the first ever gig I sort of did was at the Forum in Tunbridge Wells, small little like live band venue. And honestly, I can't remember who it was. I used to do like drum and bass worldwide with a guy called 24K and Smart Stuff. MC Bruno used to roll with him, MC Kid.
Drum and bass worldwide. I had him on the show.
Rips.
So he gave you your first. Your first taste of it.
Yeah, that was my first taste of like I think it was. I don't know, we're going back so long, I feel like I can't remember now, you know. I can't really remember. I mean, do you? I don't know if you ever went there, but they had a studio in Stratford, and then that was all being knocked down for the Olympic Village, and they moved to Hackney, and then basically word got out that I'm a bricklayer. Yeah. Rips got in touch with me and said basically they want to build this new studio in Hackney. Can I come and sort of do it for him? And so basically it wasn't building a whole studio. They had like a big sort of room, and it needed to be split into two studios. What was the other? There was a garage or house station, the other one, other studio in there.
It wasn't UK Flow, was it?
No.
No.
But anyway, basically, I went there. I ended up taking the job on, and I built it. Split it into two studios. And
Fat Beats.
No, it wasn't Fat Beats. No. Anyway, and so Drum and Bass Worldwide moved from Stratford to Hackney, and then
I think I played it the
there.
Stratford one, because there was quite a few. There was me, Hype, and we went there for guest shows when he first started.
Okay.
We had him on the show. He was one of the guests that we had a little while ago.
Yeah,
it's mad to know the connections, because he was also SMF on the Guillotine tune. Like
I don't know,
really?
It's a hardcore tune. Yeah, wicked tune. Yeah. I used to play that 88, 89. Is there anybody you want to thank?
Skibbity.
Yeah, Skibbity.
You know what?
Yeah.
And this isn't because he's passed away. Like, you know, of course, rest his soul, man. Can't believe he's gone. But he actually gave us so much love. Like, so much love, you know. Before we were anyone, he booked us for his birthday party. He had us on his after party. He set us up with a set with Nicky Black Market for the first time. He jumped on set with us at Carnival without even thinking about it. He booked us for other ones of his birthday bashes. Mm. And he always, no matter what, had love for us, and he always had time for us, you know. So that is one person I will, no matter what, I will scream his name from the rooftops, because he has always had love and supported
That's
us.
Lovely. That's
one of the funniest things or key things about him is obviously he's top of the game and always has been ever since we've known him. And do you know what?
Been into drums.
He always treated us with a lot of respect and decency, no matter whether we're talking 14 years ago or, you know, just
up to now. Yeah. Before he passed away. Mm. Yeah.
So, and it's amazing, because there's so many other people in the scene that we've known for the same period of time. But 14 years ago, they didn't want to give us their time of day.
Yeah.
They didn't want, or if they did, they you know, kind of don't really want to mess with us or talk to us too much, or they talk down to us or don't show us too much respect. Skibbity had this mad level of respect. I think it was across the board. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't just for us. He was this kind of person where he had time for people. He showed, like, honour and respect and love to sort of everybody
so
across the board.
So the people that had the same heart as him for this music, I think, that's what it boils down to, really.
I think if you're an artist that wants the scene to survive, you're always going to bring in new talent.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And
exactly.
You're always going to bring the next generation through.
Yeah.
Because without someone handing him the mic, someone handing you the mic and bringing you through,
exactly,
you're going to do the same thing to the next generation.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done through the music. There's a lot of people that we bring in because we recognise that talent.
Yeah.
Do you know
that's
what I'm
how
saying?
We keep it alive. This is how so many, you know, I'm sure you've seen it over the years, yeah, how many music genres have been born and died, because it's born, those few people that are at the top, they stay at the top and they don't want anyone to come through, and then that scene just disappears, it fizzles out, and it's non-existent, you know. And if Skibbity taught us anything, it's exactly that. Do you know what, there is enough to go around, there is enough room for all of us. And do you know what, that one little thing, seeing that one person going, do you know what, I see talent in you, and just giving them that one little thing, it could change their lives, it can change the scene, you could be a catalyst to something beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
What's the first jungle record you ever heard?
Helicopter Tune.
What, the
original.
The original.
Yeah, my mum was a garage DJ.
Okay.
She did have, so she was telling me this story randomly the other day. One of her old mates just randomly.
So that was Deep Blue.
Yeah, that's the one. And she just randomly out of nowhere back in, what, 95, 96, one of her mates was like, oh, getting rid of a bunch of vinyl. I found a bunch of jungle tunes. Here, have them. And my mum's like, I don't mix jungle. She's like, I'm a garage person. I do house and garage. But she kept them. And then she's like, oh, actually, I quite like these. And that Helicopter Tune, she used to rinse. She used to rinse it all the time. She used to mix it in with, oh my God, I want to say I think it was the Warning tune, actually. Warning, warning, warning. She used to just periodically, she'd just do a little jungle mix. But that tune, that Helicopter Tune, used to love it. Used to see her dancing around the living room to that tune. And that was my first jungle tune.
I think it was original Nutter. I think. But basically,
how old were you? Oh, sorry, how old were you when?
Oh, I must have been about 5 or 6.
How old were you?
I don't know. When I first, I remember when I first heard drum and bass, my brother had got hold of some tape packs, and I think they were from like Accelerated Culture, and so I think in the tape pack there was a mixture of drum and bass and happy hardcore.
Yeah, that would have been slamming vinyl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I remember, I think he actually preferred the happy hardcore tapes, and I preferred the drum and bass ones. And I think, yeah, it really caught my ear when I heard Original Nutter. So, and that was kind of
And that was kind of probably from a jungle and MC point of view when you heard him spitting and thinking, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I must have been maybe 10, 11.
Blimey,
like
I'm feeling old. That's 94.
Yeah.
So I was 93, 94. So I was 22.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy, isn't
it? It's mad, isn't it? But that, do you know, that's one thing I've always loved about drum and bass as well. It doesn't matter what walk of life you're from, how old you are, what you look like, none of that. If you've got heart for the music, you're accepted. And yeah. I've always loved that. You know, in most other genres, there is a type to fit. So you've got to look a certain way, you've got to sound a certain way, you've got to talk about certain things, you've got to act in certain ways, you can't be seen doing this, that and the other. Whereas in drum and bass, you do your thing. Yeah. As long as you still have that heart, as long as you love the music, welcome you with open arms. And I've always, that's what I've always loved about drum and bass. It's why it'll always be true to my heart, always.
So it sounds like you just reached a pinnacle moment in your career on Radio 1 Extra with Heartless Crew.
Yeah.
And how did that go?
Do you know what? It's actually such a mad story of how it happened. So firstly, we've got to big up Grant Epidemic.
Yes, yeah? That was another person to big up as well.
Grant because Epidemic. Basically we did quite a few gigs for him, and we have done over the years, done many. We've known him pretty much all of our relationship since he used to do Epidemic and stuff way back at SE1 and everything. So anyway, he wanted to book us for a show in Brighton. I said, oh, I'm looking to put you guys on with DJ Fonty. We've got Fonty down for a sec, looking to put you guys on with him. We said, yeah, we're up for it. We've had a few conversations over the years. We're up for doing some different things. And we spoke before about showcasing some of our tunes, doing live PAs at some of his events, because he likes to mix things up, especially when he does events at Fire, and sometimes they'll have the main room where they do switch up the genres and they do different things. Then they'll have a drum and bass drum and bass arch, sorry. And sometimes I've been a bit torn with myself. I'm thinking, do we want to be in the drum and bass room, or do we want to be in the other room? Because sometimes I don't know which one we want, yeah? Because obviously you see all our other associates, if you like, yeah, all the other top drum and bass artists, they're all in the drum and bass room, but then we get put in the other room with your Rat Pack and Everson Allen and...
Leroy Thornhill, yeah, and stuff like that.
Like. Sometimes I'm like, hang on, I don't know which one I want more right now. But anyway, it's all worked as it's supposed to, yeah? And I wouldn't have changed it for the world. And basically, anyway, what I'm trying to say is he put us on with Fonty once, and the show was sick. He then put us on with Fonty again, and it was, again, really, really sick. So after that, basically, I think we spoke to Fonty and said, look, are you up for coming on Pyro with us? We've got our own Pyro show. We'd love it if you could guest with us. And he came out and he did the show with us, and it was sick, of course, yeah. We brought Decoy in, MC Decoy. That was a sick set as well. And... from there, basically, Fonty said, look, like, you guys want to come up to our One Extra show? We're like, yeah. And then he actually called Stars a few weeks ago, or a little while ago, and said, basically, look, we're currently pre-recording the sets, yeah, because of COVID and stuff. We're not going into the BBC studio, so we're currently pre-recording. You can come and do it with us, like, or if you want to wait a little while, you can come up to the studio and get the full effect, yeah. So we said, yeah, cool, we'll wait. Mm. And then he came through a few weeks ago and said, yeah, look, we're going up to BBC Maydevale Studios to go and record this MC All-Stars show for One Extra. You guys want to get on board? And we're like, yeah, obviously.
Okay.
We didn't actually know what other MCs we were walking into. We didn't know if there was other drum and bass MCs, what other MCs they were going to be. And so, yeah, basically, we started getting emails from BBC producers, BBC executive producers, stuff with, oh my God, this is really happening. Yeah, like, it was pretty exciting times, I'm not going to lie. And then we went to the BBC Maida Vale studios, and we met some of the sort of other managers and stuff, and we said, what other MCs are coming here today? And we were expecting them to say, oh, maybe Shabba, Harry Shotter, you know, we expected some familiar names here from drum and bass. And they said, oh, Jammer from Boy Better Know, So Solid Twins, and MC Precious.
Like, what? What?
And that was that. And they said, oh, well, JME was supposed to come, but he couldn't come today. And we're just like mind blown right now, because you know, we're heavily into garage grime, and as we sort of touched on, but yeah, we've never really dabbled too much in actually meeting some of these people, working with them, especially being on like a One Extra show with them.
Yeah. I mean, it was, we felt so blessed to have been given that opportunity, because you know, like every single other person on that set, they're legends in their own right.
Yeah,
like, you know, they've got legendary status in their scenes, and for us, you know, it's this is just sort of how we look at, I look at myself as like, well, look at us as, we're little old us.
Yeah,
and we always have been. We've always thought like that. Oh, it's just, you know, we're just little old stars and Deezer. So the fact that we were then chosen to do that made me realise, I was like, oh, like God, actually, maybe we're not just little old stars and Deezer. Actually, maybe we've got something here, you know? Well,
and then the other thing is, you know, I was expecting them to, as I say some drum and bass names. And they didn't. So we were kind of like, what, we're the only ones brought in to fly the flag for drum and bass? Yeah. Because this is Heartless Crew. This is funny. I'm sure they could draw for any man in drum and bass if they wanted to. Yeah. If they called up, you know, any of these top MCs and said, look, I'm doing this One Extra thing. Do you want to roll through? Yeah. I'm sure 99% of these top drum and bass MCs.
That's a testament to you, because I said to you, you're always online, you're always doing your videos. Yeah. And that's what hard work does, you know?
Yeah,
and it's about maintaining. Yeah. It don't matter whether you're 20 or 50. If you were from the game in the beginning, you still got put the same work rate in.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I'm active. You see me all over the place doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Even when we were on Pyro, it didn't quite happen, but we were always kind of ships in passing, because I'd see you guys and I thought, and I knew, I'd heard the name. Mm. I mean, what's his from Pyro?
Rich. Or Antonio.
Antonio. Mm. Antonio, you say to me, yeah, have you checked out the Stars and Deezer? They've got a show. And I was like, and when we were on there hard, you had your, you've had that show for a little while now.
Yeah, we had it a year
had it just
before
over
lockdown.
A year before lockdown.
And so that was 2018 or 2019.
Yeah.
2019, I think. I think actually we started at the end of 2018. I think it was like August.
2019, because I was still on Pyro then. Then I left.
I'll tell you when it was. Our first Pyro show was
after Inno in the Sun.
After Inno in the Sun, so it was the beginning of July 2019. That
2019, yeah, because I was still there in the summer doing Thursdays.
And then we did our last show before COVID in March, literally in March
2020. 2020, yeah. Because that's when that they stopped, and then I went to I went back to Origin because I wanted to be broadcasting. And that's right, because 2020, 2021, I was still on Pyro, Origin for those 2 years. And then I came here, do you know what I mean? So that was mad. Like, do you know what? I was thinking about, if it had, I mean, luckily I wrote my book during lockdown.
Yeah.
And actually, it's documented everything. Like, when you read the book, it's like you're back there.
Oh,
because,
really?
Yeah, because I was living through it. Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So I wrote the book right the way through the pandemic.
I'd like to read that. I'm sorry we haven't read that.
But... Oh, have I got... Yeah, I've got some in the car.
Oh, amazing.
So I thought you got...
Yeah, nice one. Yeah, we'll grab one of those.
Do you know what? Oh, blimey, is that the time? Yeah, you guys are really interesting. Like, I was, I knew that you'd done and you were working, but I didn't know exactly how, what the breakdown was. Does your mum still DJ?
I wish.
She's giving it up?
It's, so basically she, I would say for the last 10 years, she's had a bit of a mad life for the last 10 years. She's now actually getting herself back into, she loves music, she's always loved music, she's still got a vinyl collection, she's got over 5,000 records, it's insane. And but she it all took a back burner because she was just, she had a thing she needs to deal with in her life basically. Now she's got over that and stuff, she's got through it, she's looking at starting it again, and I'm trying to push her, I'm like, come on, at least do it for like TikTok or something, you know. I was like, you'll go viral, trust me.
The thing is, Heartless Crew knew her, she'd obviously spoke to them saying, you know, remember my mum, blah, blah, blah. Like, they know her from way back. So when we started the One Extra show, that Fonty's given us this huge big up and stuff, and then just as we're getting into it, he's like, yeah, Stars, tell them who your mum is, man. Tell them who your mum is. And she's like, yeah, my mum's Funky Fee, for those that don't know. And Fonty's like, Funky Fee, remember, man.
Well, it is mad as well, because, yeah, I've known for Heartless Crew since I was about six, but I've never known them as a musician myself. So we touched Mike a couple of times with Bushkin at Notting Hill Carnival.
Yeah.
But again, it was, you know, he's met me as Stars. He didn't realise I was Funky Fee's daughter. And so now this is, and they're like, oh my God, like, you've grown. Because as I say, last time I see them, man, before getting into the music and stuff, I was single figures. I was a child, a proper child. You know, I was that little toe rag that used to run around the studio while my mum was on the decks and stuff. So now to be able to come and not just meet up with them again and be like, oh, hi, you know, remember me from back in the day, but actually to join forces and make music with them as well is just mind-blowing.
I wanted to ask you, when you write your lyrics, do you write together or do you write separate? And do you run the line by each other and go, bit of both? What do you think of this?
Yeah, I'll tell you, so here's
I find that interesting.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, so we do
it's
a bit of both.
Everything, don't we, really?
But one of the best parts, actually, is having each other to get confirmation on whether what we've written is good or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of times, if I'm honest, there's a lot of times I'll write something, yeah, and she'll be like, yeah, do you know what, it's decent, but maybe change that bit or change that bit, yeah.
Just shuffle those words around or whatever.
I don't know if you must have noticed, sometimes you hear MCs say something, yeah, and it maybe it catches your ear and you're like, huh? That's a bit of a weird thing to say or something, yeah. And it's almost like they need a partner there to tell them, to keep them in check sometimes, yeah, because it's very easy to get carried away and you can write and write and write. And so sometimes it's great having each other, yeah, to keep each other in check. So going back to what Star said earlier about we can talk to each other and we instantly know what each other is getting at. So sometimes people will take to Facebook to rant and stuff, yeah, because they want to talk to the community, the scene that knows what's going on.
Understand, yeah?
But, you know, obviously it's not great to air your negative opinions about the scene to the scene, yeah. So me and Stars have each other for that, yeah. So she can talk to me about something that's irritated her, about something that's happened in the scene, and she knows that I get it, yeah. And it doesn't have to go any further. We don't air that dirty laundry, if you like, yeah.
But it's the same with the lyrics, though.
And it's exactly the same with the lyrics, yeah. So I can write something, and she's like, yeah, do you know what, it sounds good, but change that, yeah.
Yeah.
But you sing as well, don't you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, kind of.
Yeah, but I heard you.
Yeah,
sing.
I can sing. Yeah. I mean,
she doesn't like
which is great.
She can sing. She's got a beautiful voice.
Yeah, you actually have.
I don't
your
have
tones are blinding. Because
thank you.
When I saw that thing and then I saw her switch, I was like, raw.
Yeah.
Because like, I've on my last album, I sang on like two or three of the tracks.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I've been going to acting school. I've done stuff on stage,
nice.
Singing. But when you're an artist, and especially like us lot, when we were coming through, I'm a soul rare groove man. That's where I'm from. Some of the best tunes I think I've ever made are the soulful ones.
Yeah.
But I'm known for bangers.
Yeah.
So there's a spectrum where I'm known for these, but actually I really love doing this.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? Not that I don't love that,
because
that's my instinct.
Yeah.
And that's how I am. But it's that smooth, rare groove, soulful that connects me and that stays connected for me.
Well, that's kind of what's happened with us. If you actually go on our label, if you just search Stars and Deezer on like Spotify or something and look at all the tunes we've released, 80-90% of it's like grime and hip hop. Not because we don't love drum and bass, absolutely, of course, that's where the heart lies, but we feel like we can get a much stronger message out on other genres of music. And also we find it just seems to be one of those things. We can get grime so much easier than we can get drum and bass. Although we are known as drum and bass artists, yeah, we do.
I think that's going to change, though. I think it's like anything, you know, and even with what's happened with Radio 1, One Extra, and the Heartless Crew, and then even coming in on here now, everything happens and aligns itself in the universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I'll tell you what, sorry to cut you off, we're also working on an album. Yeah,
yes.
Our first album, and we got some big features.
Yeah.
We got some really cool features, man, and we've been kind of waiting to let off. Should we say about one of the features?
Yeah,
or?
Go on. We'll let these guys know.
Go on.
So one of the features that we have, not even confirmed, we've actually finished a tune with them and everything, is MC Vapor. And he is, like, for me, I've literally watched Vapor's journey from the start, and I've always, always loved him. We as a MC duo just love everything that he does. He's such a good artist. And yeah, we've managed to land and complete a feature with him. So we've really,
done
really
like a grime track
that.
With him.
Yeah, we've done a really cool grime track with him about social media.
Yeah.
So yeah, and we've also got Foxy featuring on
a hip hop
tune as well.
Yeah, MC Foxy on the hip hop track.
Yeah.
But all of those guys. That's what I'm saying to you. It's nice that it's opening up because this is where we're from. You know, and those influences, it was very locked off before. Yeah. And as I guess social media opened it up and more people got involved, there's always good and bad in that.
Yeah.
But that just means that you can open up the doors and push it further. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think this is the thing as well, that nowadays, the difference between, say, an actual, like a proper artist, someone who's truly loves the music and someone who gets stuck in the scene, is being able to branch out into those different genres, you know? And this is no disrespect to anyone who wants this as their career path, because that's completely, you know, music's subjective and you choose what you want to walk. But if you're quite content just being a rave MC, and you don't want to produce any music, cool, but we want more than that. And I feel like that's what makes you, that's the difference between, say, an MC and an artist or an MC and a musician, because you actually want to... We make music because we like it, not because we're like, oh, we need to make a drum and bass tune or we need to make a grime track. We hear a track and go, that's the one, and we'll just lay over it. I mean, one of our tunes that we released, was it last year? Psycho. We released Psycho, That's 175 tempo, right? But it's like hip-hop beat, so the drums are half-time.
Mm.
So we've done drum and bass bars on it, but it's like a hip-hoppy tune. So that we love being able to do stuff like that, because it just, I feel like we can express ourselves properly then, you know?
Yeah.
And it is more, it shows more artistry than it does performance, if that makes sense. You know, we like to make art, not just entertain. We love entertaining, but we want to entertain with our art. You know?
Something that's always grinded our gears as well. There's some super sick lyricists in drum and bass, as you well know. Evil B, Harry Shotter, Skibbity, just to name a few. Some of what they write is so intelligent and so clever and so well put together, and the patterns and everything that they use is so, so, so good. And it's just sometimes, we've watched them perform many, many times, and you've got so many ravers that like to have a drink and do whatever else in the club. And it goes over the... it's almost like it's so wasted, you know? Like,
it feels painful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You watch the intellect come out of their mouths and it just goes over the whole crowd and you're like...
So we've always loved... When we've heard someone like Harry Shotter or Evil or any of these guys, when they've done some like grime sort of or slower music, and you can really hear what they're saying and really appreciate... I mean, we appreciate... to hear them say what they say anyway, because we take that on board and we take it in and we understand how it's been written. But there's so many other people that don't understand how it's been written, and to a lot of people it sounds like,
gobbledygook. It's the science, I think. There's being a raver and just wanting to go out raving and doing what you're doing, and then there are the kids in the front that you must have experienced that know your lyrics, lip syncing when you're in the front. Because when I played with Shabba, R.I.P. Skibbo, when I was with Stevie or any of them, Brocky and Tech, they know the lyrics because they heard it on a tape pack.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, I guess, the legacy and the history.
Yeah.
I'm just going to flip it quickly. Who's the best cook out of you two?
Definitely.
Who's the untidiest out of you two?
Who's my kitchen assistant when we're in the kitchen? Right.
So, what type of food do you cook?
Everything. To be honest, I wouldn't call myself a chef. I'm not like, but if I fancy something, I'll try it. If I like, so during lockdown, so we like to eat out quite a lot. And when lockdown hit, I'm not going to lie, when COVID first hit, we were, because we like a lot of horror and stuff. So I was like, start of a zombie apocalypse, we're all going to die. So we were really petrified. We wouldn't eat out. We were wiping down our shopping with flipping anti-back wipes and everything. We were really concerned at first. But we like to eat out. So we would say, oh God, we can't get Wagamama's anymore. We can't get KFC anymore. We can't get this, da da da. So I was like, just make it. Should we just try it? And so I literally looked up recipes. We started eating chicken katsu curry from home, which now I won't even bother with Wagamama now. The home one's better.
Yeah.
And because, again, because of lockdown, it's kind of, it's pushed me to cook a bit more. But, I mean, I cook anything. I cook jerk chicken sometimes.
She's a dab hand Chinese, in the kitchen. She's good, man.
I'll cook curry from scratch.
Before we go and do a little performance, because, boy, the time is just flying away today. I completely forgot what I was going to ask. This is a very important question. So this journey has been... How long have you guys been together?
14 years.
How long would you say your music career was... 14
years.
14 years.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
but say 14 years, but like what, 7 to 10 years when it started to take off?
When it started to take off, I'd say past 7 years.
Well, I mean, basically, we've always been doing the music thing. As we say, we met as musicians, as MCs. But my dad passed away in 12 years ago. And we
2010.
Okay.
Yeah. And my dad passed 2012.
And he took his own life as well. It was a really intense situation.
Knocked us.
Yeah, and Amber was basically living with me full time then, and so yeah, it went crazy. So as you can imagine, and so basically we didn't really do much music for a couple of years.
A few years, yeah.
And I always remember we've got our bar books, you know, our notepads and stuff. And one day when we're just sort of talking about our music and stuff, Amber pointed out to the corner and was like, "You see where our bar books are? There, yeah, just collecting dust and stuff." Mm. She's like, "That's our music career right now, you know, like we just leave it in the corner, like collecting dust. If we want to be more proactive and start doing something with it, we need to get those out and use them every day and not let them collect dust. We need to use them so much they're not collecting dust." And that always stuck with me, you know. So that was how we were treating our music. And so we started to pick
it was like
up.
A wake-up call, as if to say, you know what,
At the time, because of course, obviously, with the traumatic situation that happened, we were both of course pretty down and depressed and stuff. But then of course our thing to make us feel better was the music. But that had obviously taken such a back burner and had taken such a dip because of the traumatic experience that had happened. That wasn't giving us any joy either, you know. We were going, we were just bumbling around. We've got nothing to bring us joy. And it was that, I mean, I'm just like, hang on a minute, look, that right there, this is why we're not happy, because that sums up the thing that makes us happy right now. It's just there.
Yeah.
You know?
But then from there, just to summarise, from there, we started doing the stuff in Belgium. We started up a crew. We started going back and forth, trying to rebrand ourselves. Then fast forward a couple of years, we weren't doing too much. We weren't really that serious about it. Then I broke my ankle in 2017.
Yeah, my 27th birthday. And
I had to spend a week in hospital. And then obviously six weeks or months.
No, it was like 3 months down the line.
You know, resting up on the sofa all the time with my foot up. And so I had so much time to think, and we had so many like unfinished projects. And that was a real turning point. So five odd years ago was really when we started like, right, okay.
Is that when we started the label?
We've got, no, it was when we came back from America, we started the label. Oh, okay. But then it was like, right, okay, now we've got some direction. We kind of know what we're doing. We're sticking with Stars and Deezer. We're sticking with the logo. We're sticking with the brand. We finished off all the unfinished bits, started filming music videos, and so from about 4 years ago is when we really started accelerating and moving things forward in the right direction, on the right path, and stuck to our guns as well.
Just realise I said seven, because if we started the label just after we came back from America, that's probably why, because we went to America first time in 2015.
Yeah, but it was the second time we went to America we started the label.
Oh, so it's 2018 then.
So all this journey now has led you to, what is your dream? What do you see?
Doing more BBC stuff, to be honest. That's actually we love doing drum and bass. Okay. We love doing it, but do you know we'd quite happily continue doing the BBC stuff and doing bigger gigs and stuff, but we'll still do our drum and bass. That's where our heart lies, you know. But
I was going to say, I think what our next sort of step, if you like, we want to do tours and stuff, but we want to do them in the non-conventional way. So kind of almost a mixture of the rave scene and what a touring artist would do. So we'll have like our show where we perform all our tracks and stuff, but you'll be getting an hour's drum and bass set at the end of it as well. Do you know what I mean? So like we want to start something slightly different, we'd like to go out and do all the touring stuff like you see your Stormzy's and your Dave's and stuff doing, but we also want to stick to our roots. So we'd quite like to, I mean, you know, in the ideal world, over the next 5 years, we'll start this fantastic new show, which is us performing our tracks and then giving you a dirty drum and bass set, and we'll get a different guest each time we do a drum and bass set or something like that, you know?
And do you know
just
that,
just to change it up.
Do you know that tune, Transition, by Mackie G and Fantasy?
Mm.
Yeah, and it starts like with grime, goes into drum and bass, and then back to grime again. We did a cover of that track, unofficial cover, yeah, and we just did a music video and we put it out. And still to that day is one of our most popular tunes. Everybody loves it. A lot of people actually hear it, don't even know it's Mackie G and Fantasy. But the essence of it is the fact that it's the sort of the grime into drum and bass, back to grime, back to drum and bass, yeah. And it's not just that, it's the way we fully switch from spitting grime on it to then spitting drum and bass on it.
Back we spit all the way through, there's no gaps in it.
Yeah, so we speed up with it, and we slow down with it.
Where it speeds up from the grime to drum and bass, we're spitting all over that as well. It's like solid bars all the way
through. And so
when
we've done live PAs, because we've been to quite a few places and done live PAs of our tracks there, and when we do them, we always close with that track. And it always, always, always goes off. So, yeah, that's kind of what we want to bring to the table. We want to be able to do our live PAs, whether it's hip-hop, grime, or drum and bass, and then finish on a note with, you know, heavy sort of drums and just mix it all up. We love bringing through some of our people that we work with as well. Because, you know, we've got some other MCs that we work with. They're sort of mainly from the grime scene.
But you want a name check?
Man Like Reds, Tiny K.
They're from the grime scene, really, but they're very talented lyricists, and they've been doing a lot of stuff with us, and or we like bringing them into things. So when we bring them out on drum and bass, it really goes off, you know, because they're unknown names, so to speak, in drum and bass, but they're wicked with it, you know, they're so sick with it. And so it's think of when Fun brought Harry Shotter out. You know, when he first brought him out, it was like, "Right, who is this new guy?" And he's coming with some wicked different styles, and it was something new. And that was sometimes that's what A, the scene needs, and B, what people really love. They'd love to just see that fresh new thing.
Yeah.
So we've never played together, have we?
No, I don't think we have.
So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna start off with some old school.
Cool.
Then we're gonna go through the gears.
Cool.
Up to date.
So
we got time. But I'm pleasantly surprised to watch your story develop, because I really think, you know, when you just get a feeling that I've heard your name so many times and I've watched you in the distance, but I'm going to bring that forward now and watch what's happening, because I think you guys are going to blow. Something's going to happen.
Thank you, man.
And something like, you know, it's, again, hard work. Every time I put on my socials, I see you, I see on Facebook, I see on Insta, so, and I see your videos, and I see people talking to you, and then I see you on Pyro. There was there was a young girl that was spitting bars the other day, and he was on
a couple
of weeks ago, because you bring quite a few people through, don't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, the list, I've actually kept a list of all our guests, because I mean, every time we do a show, we bring new special guests. And the list is growing. The list is pretty big now, man. You know, after, because before we were just doing monthly shows, but we would do 2 hours and we would split that into two sets. So of course we've got one or two guests on the first hour, one or two guests on the second hour. So then when Pyro put those videos up as well, it split into two shows. So effectively we're doing two shows a month. Now we're actually squeezing in pre-records in between these shows as well. So now we're doing even more shows. I mean, we just did a pre-record of Black Market and Mills. We recently did one that went out with DJ Archie, that world's youngest DJ. Big up Archie's our little mate. And this list of the guests that we've had is just growing, and it's so yeah, when we love doing that, you know, we love actually being those people that use our platform to help other people, especially people that are doing bits, people that are talented. And
it's important to do that.
Yeah.
Because it's a confidence thing as well, because you know what it feels like.
Exactly.
To have that kind of, am I good enough? Am I not good enough?
Yeah.
And just that little booster, do you know what I mean?
Where we've also experienced so many times a lot of the bitterness that some people have.
I'm just gonna touch on that.
Yeah, and they, you know, sometimes people sort of, if they're like, yeah, they're pretty good actually, they're making moves, but you know, I don't really want to bring them through. I don't, you know, maybe some people feel like maybe it could dampen their shine or anything like that. And do you know, we've experienced that side of it, and we would never ever want to be those people. We're very comfortable in ourselves as well. We're comfortable with who we are and what we're doing.
Yeah, I see that. That's really good.
And so, do you know, if someone else is sick, let's bring them through.
But
man.
That's the thing is, when you're comfortable with yourself,
yeah,
then you're not threatened by anyone.
No.
Yeah.
I was talking to some. I'm going to give you my book. You're going to love the book. Yeah, I think. Yeah, and there's a couple of things that will resonate with you when we were talking about. Not giving too much away, but I mean, yeah, it's and it's refreshing because you're not scared. Listen, when I brought Serum and Blade Runner and Voltage and all of them on Fotech or whoever, I wasn't scared. Yeah. I was like, come in, because it's going to make this better. Yeah,
exactly.
It's going to make me better.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's going to make you better. It's going to, you know, when I remember Brian G dropping a tune and then saying, boy, you know what, to Ronnie, Ray's made a bad tune, you know, he's like, what? He's back in the studio.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then we all meet in the place and it's like, it's just going off because those were the tape packs that you heard. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you two. I'm going to talk to you guys with some stuff off camera. Is there anyone you want to thank?
The whole drum and bass scene, do you know what? We've got to send love to everyone in the drum and bass scene because, you know what, regardless of any stigma or anything like that we've ever come across, you lot showing us love now. So thank you to the scene.
Yeah, thank you to Thames Delta. Of course, they've always got our backs, always bringing us in, putting us in good little positions.
Thanks for coming today.
You're welcome. Thank you to yourself.
And one last bit of love. Big love to Tanya and the UMC family.
Yeah,
our agent Tanya. She's an absolute don. Big love to everyone that's on UMC as well. Family collective there. Yeah, great.
Bigging up Tanya. I used to be on there a long time ago.
Yeah,
she's great. We've had a few agents beforehand, and we've never been as comfortable with anyone as we are with her.
Good.
She's like a friend, basically. Yeah. That's the best way to explain it. And I'm sure you probably know. She's really lovely. She looks after us well. She checks in with us all the time. All through lockdown, you know, there was no money for any of us. Yeah, it's not like some people say agents only work because of the money they get. No, it was none of that. She was doing her part, keeping us all together when there was no money for anyone, you know, so she didn't need to do any of that. She could have sat there drinking her tea or her coffee or whatever and just left us all to it, but she kept checking in with all of us all through lockdown.
There's a few ladies in the scene that have built the scene that are unsung heroes, and there's a section in the book about the strongest women in my life, and there's a lot of women that run the scene that don't necessarily like, I've got big up Laura, who looks after our label, she looks after a few other labels, big up Susie, who does our artwork, you know, all unsung heroes that do the work behind, not necessarily in front.
Yeah.